And welcome to Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, we have Dr. Krista Johns-Keating. She is a gastroenterologist with Virtua Health, and we're going to talk about gut health today. So hello there.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. I think I have good gut health today. But before we even start this conversation, this is going to sound silly, but when we say gut, what are we actually talking about?
We're really talking about the abdominal organs such as the stomach, the small intestine, the colon. That's usually what we're referring to.
So how did you become a gastroenterologist?
That's a great question. I was actually in my third year of medical school and not really sure what I wanted to do. I went into medical school wanting to be a pediatrician. I did my pediatrics rotation and didn't really love it. I love kids, but did not really enjoy the rotation that much. So then I was kind of lost and didn't really know what I wanted to do. I stumbled upon the rotation in gastroenterology, and I just fell in love with it. I just loved the patients. I loved the conditions and diseases. I loved the mix of clinic and hospital work and doing procedures. I loved that, you know, a lot of the conditions you can actually kind of diagnose just based on the history, and then being able to do a procedure to confirm your suspicions, I just found really interesting. And I just fell in love with the field from then.
When we're talking about our gut, I mean, how many square inches? Is this like our biggest system, you know, for a human being?
Yeah, it is. It's you know, it's from your mouth to your anus. So it's a pretty long way to go.
I just heard an author talking about a new book, and she used that phrase, mouth to anus. This is how we kind of experience so much taste and sensation and fulfillment and happiness, and then out it goes.
Exactly.
What are some of the common ailments that affect us when we're talking about our stomach, our intestines, our, you know, the colon, the whole system there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many things. So, for example, acid reflux is one that many people suffer from. Also, irritable bowel syndrome is a very common condition. Inflammatory bowel disease, such as Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, is another condition. Diverticulitis is something that some people will suffer from time to time. So there are many, many diseases.
Are they becoming more common? Are you seeing more cases of people coming in with inflammatory bowel disease? I judge things by how many commercials I see.
I think, you know, part of the reason why you're seeing so many commercials is because we have so many treatments available for it now, which we didn't have in the past, which is really, really wonderful.
When we talk about our gut in general, I notice that stuff seems to be aimed towards women. Do women have more issues?
And I would say that, you know, there are definitely some things that make GI issues in women unique. For example, our hormones, and especially around the menstrual cycle, can definitely lead to certain symptoms such as bloating and diarrhea or even constipation. Pregnancy and childbirth can also cause some worsening of acid reflux and constipation and lead to issues with the pelvic floor weakening, which can lead to issues down the road. It's also important to note that in our abdomens, our gut shares space with our reproductive organs, the female reproductive organs. So that is also another unique issue for women.
Are our intestines longer too?
They are a little bit longer because we have to share the space with all the reproductive organs in our abdomen.
Wow, you'd think they'd be a little bit shorter as a result, wouldn't you? This is going to sound wild, but we talk about our gut instinct. We talk about gut feeling. And when something is going wrong with us, whether it's stress or a food issue, a lot of infections, you get a flu bug or whatever, everything seems to start with our gut, and everything seems to affect it as well.
Yeah, so there's definitely a mind-body connection, and a lot of our stress and things seem to come out in our symptoms related to our gut. So a lot of people, when you say you have butterflies, like you feel it in your gut. So there's definitely a very big mind-body connection.
And is there a psychological tie to all of this as well? Can we think ourselves into gut issues?
So one condition that we definitely see a very large mind-body connection with would be irritable bowel syndrome, and that can definitely be triggered by stress. And patients will tell you that all the time, that, you know, in times of stress, irritable bowel syndrome symptoms definitely are a lot worse.
A lot of people self-diagnose when it comes to issues of their tummy and their bowels, and they, oh, I'm allergic to this, or I can't tolerate this, et cetera. Yet at the same time, do you find that people kind of ignore issues and don't want to actually come to you and seek professional help?
Yeah, I do find that a lot. A lot of people ignore issues, and as you ignore issues, it just becomes kind of a part of your life, and you don't really see it as an issue anymore. It's just kind of how things are for you, and you get used to it, and you just go along, and then the next thing you know, it's been 10, 15 years with these symptoms, and you haven't seen a doctor for them. So it's very important to see a doctor for any symptoms that you're having, because you don't want to self-diagnose yourself. You want to see a professional and you know, have yourself evaluated and see if there are any treatments available, and just figure out what's going on.
Have treatments changed? Are we seeing more ways of helping people that have IBS?
Yeah, we do have more treatments available now than we did even 10 years ago. So it's definitely a good idea to just come in and get an appointment, be evaluated, and see if, you know, any of these treatments are right for you.
Let's talk about irritable bowel syndrome. How do you know that you actually are having an issue? Because so many things can affect your digestive system. Maybe it was the extra taco yesterday, or maybe you picked up something, or maybe you have a very stressful job, or you don't get exercise. How do you actually know that there is something wrong with you? Are we all the same? I guess I should start. Is there a normal?
Yeah, so I think that's one really good reason to go in and talk to a doctor, because your physician will help you figure out if this is just a reaction to something you ate or if there is something more going on. Just coming in, talking about your symptoms, how long you've had your symptoms, other symptoms associated with what you're feeling, having blood work done and stool tests sometimes, and even imaging studies such as an ultrasound can really be helpful in figuring out what's going on.
Well, there again, that's if you actually go and see a physician, if you go in and see a gastroenterologist.
Exactly.
Right. Now, this does sound like a dumb question. What is normal? What should somebody expect? Say you get up, you eat a bowl of cereal in the morning, you have a nice lunch that's reasonable, you don't overindulge in anything, you go to bed. I mean, what should be a normal gut existence, you know, co-relationship going on there?
Yeah, so, you know, I think after eating normal amount of meal of food for your meals and going about your day, you really shouldn't have too many symptoms. Now, sometimes, you know, you might be a little sensitive, lactose intolerant, maybe you have a little bit of bloating, but that's all really for you to figure out with your doctor if what you're experiencing is normal or not.
Well, I hear people talk about heartburn, for instance. Somebody else might be susceptible to hiccups, and that's part of all of this too, is it not?
Yeah, and that's definitely those are things that we talk about all the time as gastroenterologists and evaluate patients for, and just coming in, talking about your symptoms and what exactly you're feeling, if you've tried any over-the-counter medications. These are all things that help us to evaluate and figure out if there is a need for any further testing, such as like an upper endoscopy or any further treatments.
Oh, you know, I'm going to ask you now about the different types of tests. I'm going to get into that. But what's the most, is gas something that everybody experiences?
Mm-hmm.
Do people need to belch? Are those aberrations, or is that something that, you know, somebody who doesn't belch and burp and pass gas, you know, is gas normal?
Yeah. So, you know, everyone passes gas, quite a bit of gas every day, actually. And the gas goes somewhere, either out the rear end or you can belch it. Now, if it's an excessive amount, that's something to definitely have evaluated. But it is normal to pass gas. The foods we eat produce gas in our guts. So it is normal to have gas.
I didn't say the F word. I'm very proud of me. I was proud I came up with pass gas. are you seeing more cases of irritable bowel disease, or is there something that we're seeing more of as our diet gets worse and worse, and we eat more processed foods, and a lot of us didn't get exercise over the last 18 months or so?
I definitely have been seeing more irritable bowel syndrome in my practice, and I do think it has a lot to do with the very stressful past almost 2 years that we've all had. Even beyond just the everything going on with the pandemic, but people, you know, a lot of stress in their jobs, with their families, and I have definitely been seeing more irritable bowel syndrome in my practice personally. And it might definitely have something to do with all the stress that a lot of people have been facing.
What are some of the symptoms? And again, you might be opening some eyes where somebody realizes that not everybody is experiencing what I am experiencing.
Mm-hmm. So the main feature of irritable bowel syndrome is abdominal pain. But with that, some people will have abdominal pain with constipation. Other people might have irritable bowel syndrome with diarrhea. And some people actually have a mixed form where they have diarrhea and constipation, like alternating. And we have different treatments for all the different types. So it's important to come in and be evaluated and see if any of the treatments will work for you.
And you say that stress can make this a worse situation.
Yeah, it can definitely trigger it.
I think we all know somebody who's had an experience that actually affects their pleasure in life, you know, enjoying, you know, going out, doing things, have issues with employment because of bowel issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it's interrupting your daily life, that's definitely a time to come and see a gastroenterologist. We have treatments that can help and help you to find ways to manage it and live like a more normal life, being able to go to work, school, and just go about your daily activities.
Hey, if you're just joining us, this is Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we are talking to gastroenterologist Krista Johns-Keating. She is with Virtua Health. And if you'd like more information about their programs, learn more about your gut, go to virtua.org/gut health. That's real easy. Virtua.org/gut health. What should trigger an appointment with you? What should make me go to a physician? And do I go to my physician, or do I say I want to go to a gastroenterologist?
You can do either or. You can go to your primary care doctor. They are well equipped in treating a lot of different GI issues. And if they feel something is out of their scope of practice, then they will refer you to a gastroenterologist. But definitely there are a lot of symptoms that you should never ignore, such as like blood in your stool, if you have any unexplained weight loss, if you have a sudden change in your symptoms, if you are, you know, over the age of 60 and you're suddenly now having acid reflux symptoms, which you never had before, that's definitely something that should prompt a visit with a physician. If you have anemia, that's another reason to see a gastroenterologist and have further evaluation done. And if you have like just persistent pain symptoms and persistent symptoms that are just interfering with your daily life, those are all reasons to come and be evaluated.
So what I'm reading from this is change, if you're having changes.
Yeah. So another example, if you're somebody who normally you have one bowel movement a day and then all of a sudden you start having diarrhea symptoms or you become more constipated and that's just not the norm for you, then that's definitely a reason to see a physician. So one last thing I just want to say is that we hear it all as gastroenterologists. So don't be embarrassed to come in and talk about symptoms that you've been having. We really do hear it all. We talk about this all day, every day. So just don't be embarrassed. Feel free to be honest with us and tell us what you're experiencing.
When you say you hear it all, I mean, and I'm going to guess you hear it in the terms that I was skirting around here.
Yes. Yeah, so don't be afraid to be graphic. Don't be afraid to be very detailed and just tell us exactly what's going on so we can best help you.
So don't be embarrassed. Just come in and lay it down on the line that this is what I'm experiencing and this is what I'm feeling. Should we keep track of any symptoms?
Yeah, I think it's always helpful to actually keep track with like a food diary and like a food and symptom diary, and writing down exactly when, so that when you come in and we ask you, oh, well, how often do you feel this or that? You're not just guessing. You can actually give us a more accurate timeline.
Do you ever ask people to write out food diaries?
I do. It can be really helpful to help identify if there are any food triggers to the symptoms that a patient's experiencing.
And I mentioned that everybody says that, oh, I'm allergic to this or I can't tolerate that. Are food allergies and issues with gluten, et cetera, are they as common as the food manufacturers are trying to tell us they are?
Certain things are pretty common. I'd say lactose intolerance is very common, especially as we get older. We lose the enzyme that we need to break down dairy. And so I would say that's very common. Food allergies are different than something such as lactose intolerance. But if you do have food allergies, there are definitely allergists and other physicians who specialize in like allergies that we can also help with that.
Is there a danger when we're trying to self-diagnose ourselves?
Yeah, I think, you know, self-diagnosing is never really the best way to go about it. I think it's best to speak to a professional, someone who's trained in diagnosing these things and getting your answers there.
Well, you said scope just a moment ago, and of course that I'm taking it out of context there. But what are some of the diagnostic tools that you have, in your arsenal there?
Yeah. So as a gastroenterologist, I do procedures such as an upper endoscopy and a colonoscopy. So upper endoscopy, you are put to sleep for these procedures. I should just start off by saying that. But the upper endoscopy, we pretty much have a camera at the end of a long flexible tube and has a light at the end. And with the upper endoscopy, we go into the mouth, down into your esophagus, your stomach, and the first part of your small intestine, which is called the duodenum. And using our camera scope, we can take biopsies, we can look around, we can take pictures, we can do dilations. If you have a narrowed area in like your esophagus that's causing food to not go down easy and get stuck, we can actually dilate the esophagus. So we can diagnose and we can treat using our camera scopes. The colonoscopy, the scope is a little bit longer, a little bit thicker, but still flexible tube, and that also has a light at the end. And we go up your backside into your colon to take a look at your large intestine. And we can also get into the very end of your small intestine called the terminal ileum using our colonoscope. And from there, we can take a look around, look for polyps, which are abnormal growths in the colon. And those can actually turn into cancer over time. So during the colonoscopy, we actually remove these growths. We can also take biopsies and take pictures and take a look around.
I'm going to guess an endoscopic procedure is going to be something that there's a symptom or a reason for it, because we all know that a colonoscopy is one of the greatest things that we can do for ourselves and our loved ones. How often and when should we start getting those? Because is colon cancer, and that's obviously the number one reason why you're going up there, is it increasing and is it getting younger?
Yeah, we are seeing it at younger ages, which is why the guidelines actually changed recently to start performing colonoscopies at the age of 45, or colorectal cancer screening, I should say, at the age of 45. Previously, it was recommended for African Americans to have screening exams starting at age 45, but now that's the recommendation for everybody to have colorectal cancer screening starting at age 45.
Well, then we look at the actor, Chad Boseman, who passed at 40. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think he even made it to 45.
No.
African American male. Is there a reason behind this? Is it genetics? Is it...
Mm-hmm.
Why do some people get colon cancer, or are some people more likely to develop it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so family history can definitely play a role. In fact, if you have a first-degree relative with colon cancer, it's actually recommended that you start screening usually earlier, depending on the age of that first-degree relative's diagnosis. And then it's usually recommended that you have a colonoscopy at least every 5 years if you have a first-degree relative with colon cancer. And then another large part of, I think, the increase we're seeing in colon cancer being diagnosed at younger ages has to do with the American diet and just the amount of processed foods that are in the American diet. I think obesity, which is related to processed foods, but obesity, I think, is also playing a big role.
And here we go into the most people. Once you have a colonoscopy, you're never afraid of it. I have to say that. But people dread the prep so much. And I have to admit, I've had several. And it's changed. It has changed so drastically since my first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The prep has definitely gotten better. We used to really only have Go Lightly. It's a gallon prep as an option, but now there are much more. There are many more options now. Smaller volume preps. There's even a prep where you can mix Miralax with Gatorade, which a lot of people like. But there are a lot of preps now to choose from, and depending on your insurance, that kind of helps us to determine which one we can prescribe.
I know that colonoscopy is obviously your best tool, but now there are the stool sample tests as well. Do you recommend those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know, it's a the stool tests we can also do for screening for colon cancer, but the colonoscopy is the only diagnostic and therapeutic tool we have. So if you have a stool test and it's positive, you still need a colonoscopy. But for some people, you know, just talking to your doctor and figuring out which screening test is best for you is really important.
Well, you mentioned that this is a therapy, but it is actually you're preventing future colon cancers by going in there and doing this colonoscopy and removing those polyps. What else can we do? You alluded to diet and you alluded to our weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exercise is important. Not smoking is also important. Just eating a healthy diet.
It's as simple as that. What about fiber?
Yeah, fiber is definitely a good thing. Yeah.
Should we be avoiding processed foods? And is meat good for? I'm a vegetarian, so I'm just asking that. You know my opinion. So, but what do you say about our diet? What should we have on our plate on a consistent basis?
Yeah. So lots of fruits and vegetables and baked lean meats and chicken, and those things are much better than the highly processed foods like fast food and deli meats and things like that.
I may be a vegetarian, but I am no health nut. I live on cheese and processed food, and I love it to death. And people say, oh, wow, you know what you ought to consider is a fast, or eat this particular yogurt and you're going to have a better digestive tract. Try this cleanse and you'll be healthier. Are these actually something to spend money on?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I really feel like a lot of those are just gimmicks and fads, and your body cleanses itself. So there's really no need to go and spend all this money on these cleanse and fad diets and things that you see advertised. Your body cleanses itself.
And is that when we eat and drink? And should we be drinking more water? There's another one that we hear a lot about.
Yeah, so a lot of people do not drink enough water. So definitely drinking a lot of water is important. It's also great to help treat constipation. That's usually one of the first things I recommend. Well, how much water are you drinking and how much fiber are you getting in your diet? So drinking enough water is very, very important.
Now, final question. You know what time of the year we're in. Mm-hmm. We're right in the thick of it. And how do we get through? How do we get through the holidays? Are there any tips that we should be taking when we look at that fine buffet table and it's loaded down?
Yeah, well, holidays are a really fun time. Many people are spending time with their loved ones and friends and family. So definitely enjoy yourself, but there are definitely some things that you can do. So, for example, don't lay down right after eating. It's best to really not lay down for 3 hours after eating, just giving your food time to leave your stomach and go into your small intestine and be digested. It's also a good idea to just try to get some exercise, maybe after dinner and before you start dessert. It's a good idea to just go for a little walk around your neighborhood with your friends and family. Just take a nice family walk after the big meal. So those are just some things that you can definitely do during the holidays.
We're starting a new year. That usually starts, most people have a desire for some new resolution. Every year we're going to get healthier. We're going to do better by ourselves. What are some of the things that we should think about long term?
So I think some good things to think about, getting enough exercise, even a few days a week, just walking 30 minutes at a time can really make a big difference in how you feel overall. Exercise and just getting outside is just really important. Another big thing, making sure you're drinking enough water and eating a healthy diet are also very important things to think about with the new year coming. Something else I just want to bring up I know the holiday season is a very busy time for people, but it's important not to ignore any symptoms that you're having because you're busy. If you're having blood in your stool or any new symptoms, changes in your symptoms, don't postpone seeing your doctor because you're busy. Definitely get evaluated. I know the holidays are a very busy time for people, but you have to take care of yourself.
And the dangers of delaying?
I mean, that could be a delayed diagnosis, and if it's something serious going on, it could end up being worse for you.
And you've scared me enough. So before we close, you want to talk a little bit? I asked you just briefly, and I didn't let you really finish. Talk about the Virtua GI and digestive health programming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have over 20 GI offices in South Jersey, located in Atlantic, Burlington, Camden, and Gloucester counties. And it's really easy to just schedule an appointment either by calling us or going online.
And again, we can start with a gastroenterologist.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. When we go to your website, do you offer suggestions or tips on keeping a healthy gut?
Yeah, so our website has a lot of great resources, including healthy recipes and digestive health advice. So it's really a great resource we have there.
And we can find out more about all of your programs going there as well.
Correct.
And that website, of course, is virtua.org/gut health. That's where you're going to find out more information about all the programming that they offer. And you can make an appointment there with Dr. Johns Keating or with a Virtua Health gastroenterologist and find out about those healthy gut recipes and digestive health advice. And I'm going to assume that includes exercise as well.
Yeah.
I was dying to ask you when you mentioned taking a brisk walk and not lying down 3 hours after a meal.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to wait an hour after we eat to go in the water?
You know, that's always been talked about, but personally, I think it's a good idea to wait a little bit, but I don't know about exactly an hour.
Just thought I'd throw that in there here at the end. And so, giving you the 2 minute warning here, you want to take us home? What parting advice? What should we be thinking about?
Yeah, so I think the best advice would be to, if you have questions, if you're having symptoms, just make an appointment, come and see one of us. We have over 20 offices, as I mentioned, and just come in and get evaluated.
Okay. And again, the web address, virtua.org/gut health. And you'll find out more about, there are 20 offices in South Jersey, in Atlantic, Burlington, Camden, and Gloucester counties. You'll find out about those, again, those healthy recipes. You'll find out about their digestive health advice. Learn more about your gut there at virtua.org/gut health. And my guest today, gastroenterologist Krista Johns Keating. And thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Hope to talk to you again. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Philadelphia Focus.